Coming up on KUCB News, City Council criticized over city manager contract, and the Alaska Marine Highway System faces a lawsuit. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Barrett Wilbur with some local news on Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017. The U.S. Coast Guard rescued a sick mariner yesterday from a cargo ship near Cold Bay. Officials say the MV Bulk Freedom was 400 miles from town when a crew member suffered from abdominal pain. The vessel sailed closer to land so a Coast Guard helicopter crew could rescue the 44-year-old man. He was transported to Cold Bay and then Anchorage for emergency medical care. Once again, the Unalaska City Council has taken no action after calling an executive session to discuss the city manager's contract behind closed doors. The first session was sparsely attended by the public, but last night, councilors got an earful as more than 40 people packed City Hall. KUCB's Laura Kriegel reports.
Mayor Frank Kelty has confirmed this is not a routine contract review. Beyond that, it's not clear why the city council is looking so closely at Dave Martinson, who served as city manager for almost 2 years. Citing privacy policies, this is all the council has said on the subject.
Make a motion to go into executive session to discuss city manager's contract.
Councilors spent almost an hour in private session while City Attorney Brooks Chandler joined by telephone. When they did reconvene before the public, Mayor Kelty said only this.
The city manager's existing contract is still in effect, and so I have to say that.
An Alaska resident, Aaron Enlow, however, had something more to say.
There's some stuff going on here. It's not proper. It's not right.
That's why Enlow created a Facebook event encouraging community members to attend the meeting and speak their minds.
Parties involved can't say anything. And these are people who I know, love, and trust. And if they can't talk about it, I've been trying to find my own answers in there.
Enlow declined to specify the parties involved, but in her Facebook post, she says the council is discussing Martinson's contract because he refused to discipline Deputy Police Chief Jennifer Shockley. Shockley wasn't immediately available for comments, and Martinson has declined to speak with KUCB. But in the post, Enlow says Shockley created an anonymous online survey with questions about counselors' performances. Enlow says that, quote, appears to have made one or more of them uncomfortable. And while counselors haven't confirmed the reasons for the executive sessions, several Unalaskans criticized them on Tuesday for disrespecting the First Amendment right to free speech. During public comments, Unalaska resident D. Montier Burke issued a challenge to the council.
As elected officials, criticism from voters is like a performance review. It's how you know and how you gauge voter opinion of the work you perform. Thus, it's a chance for improvement. In the future, I challenge you to use public comment, whether it be positive, negative, or indifferent, as a chance for opportunity and self-reflection.
The City Council's next meeting is scheduled for September 12th. It's unclear if the city manager's contract will be on the agenda again. In Unalaska, I'm Laura Kriegel.
A rally against the Pebble Mine is scheduled for downtown Anchorage today, while a new advisory committee for the company behind the mine meets in person for the first time. Opponents of the mine, like Alana Hurley with United Tribes of Bristol Bay, were invited to the meeting, but Hurley says they declined because the tribal governments that she represents have already made their position clear.
Why would the people of Bristol Bay waste our time to do this again so that the Pebble Limited Partnership could pretend that they're listening to the stakeholders the people of Bristol Bay, and Alaskans. If they were listening, they would have been gone a decade ago.
Hurley says the rally is meant to highlight unity against the mine across the political spectrum.
We're really at a turning point in history where we're either going to trade the last great salmon sockeye fishery on the face of the planet for a foreign mining company to develop a gold mine at the headwaters of that fishery, or we're going to choose a sustainable way of living and a sustainable economy.
Mike Heatwool, a spokesperson for the Pebble Partnership, says the company formed the advisory committee to include local people in the conversation.
And that's really to give us a range of feedback, ask us hard questions, potentially offer ideas that we may not have thought of, and really kick the tires aggressively, if you will, on all of the things that a development at Pebble could be, the social concerns, the environmental concerns, the economic opportunities.
Willie Hensley, who is Inupiaq, an advocate for Alaska Native rights and served in the Alaska State House, is among those who have committed to sit on the advisory committee. The company plans to release a smaller plan this fall, says Heatwool, along with a transportation plan to get minerals out. With a more favorable administration in Washington and an EPA proposal to withdraw a determination blocking development of the mine, Heatwool says the company is forging ahead.
So the remaining goals are to file a permit by the end of this year, along with having a longer-term partner to get us through that permitting window.
The 90-day comment period for the EPA proposal to withdraw their opposition to the mine kicked off July 17th. It officially ends on October 17th. The rally starts at 3 p.m. outside the Captain Cook Hotel. The U.S. Department of Labor says the Alaska Marine Highway System is violating federal leave laws. A civil suit filed in U.S. District Court alleges the ferry system miscalculates time off mandated by the Family Medical Leave Act. State officials deny that claim. The act requires large employers to provide 12 weeks of unpaid leave when a child is born, fostered, or adopted. Terms also cover care for a seriously ill family member. The conflict surrounds what are called rotational employees. Those are ferry staffers who work for 1 to 3 weeks straight, then take the same amount of time off. The federal complaint, filed last week, says the ferry system counts such time off as part of the 12 weeks leave required by federal law. It says that's illegal. The U.S. Department of Labor attorneys in Anchorage and Seattle did not return calls for comment by deadline, but Corey Mills with Alaska's Department of Law says the ferry system did nothing wrong.
The state continues to assert its longstanding interpretation of the Family Medical Leave Act and will continue to support that in the court action.
She says the state is aware of the complaint, but has not been served with an official copy. The complaint asks the court to order the state to follow the Labor Department's interpretation of the rules. It asks that any fired employee be reinstated and compensated for lost wages and benefits. It also calls for any worker who lost pay or leave time to have it restored. The suit does not say how many employees have been affected or what jobs they held. Places like Washington State have a long history of commercial oyster farming, and that means a long record of testing for deadly shellfish toxins. Alaska's, by comparison, is relatively new, but that hasn't stopped a growing number of people interested in cultivating oysters. Alaskans are working together to try to make that industry safe and profitable. By tracking where paralytic shellfish poisoning occurs, more of the state's seafood could make it to market. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins explains.
Alaska's shellfish producers have to go through rigorous testing routinely to make sure their product is safe to eat. When the weather is warm, they submit a sample to the state's lab every week, sometimes more. That's where Matthew Forrester comes in. Lots of people start their morning with a blended drink, but the mixture Forrester is whipping up won't become breakfast.
We often describe it as making an oyster milkshake. You know, it just makes a slurry.
Forrester tests commercial food for the Department of Environmental Conservation. Today he's examining shellfish from three different farms. After pulverizing the oysters to a beige mush, he boils the mixture with acid, which simulates digestion. And when the mixture cools, it gets spun around to separate the remaining oyster parts. What's left goes into a tiny syringe.
The testing consists of injecting three mice and then observing for death and time of death.
not all of the lab mice will die from paralytic shellfish poisoning. But on occasion, some do. That's when Forrester has to send an email to the farmer to let them know their mussels or oysters aren't safe to eat.
It feels bad. That's the best way to put it. No one wants to deliver bad news. But I also know many of the farmers, they don't want to get bad news either, but they would rather know and ensure the safety of their customers than not know.
This summer, Forrester has had to deliver the bad news to 5 commercial oyster farms, mostly in Southeast. That's an uptick from last year. And some of those producers lost out on business longer than previous years. It wound up costing one farmer I spoke with over $30,000. The toxin that causes paralytic shellfish poisoning is produced by harmful algal blooms. The algae can flourish in warm water. But Jenny Eckert, a fisheries professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, says right now, the warm water doesn't appear to be the problem.
The ocean this year was actually, from all accounts that I've been hearing, was fairly close to normal.
Still, she says the harmful algae from previous warming could be taking a nap at the bottom of the ocean.
So you could sort of get a buildup of this resting phase in the sediments during these warm years that then can then persist in other years.
But Eckert stresses it's not just one thing that causes the problem. It's a combination of factors, the perfect storm. More fresh water from glacial melt is also thought to be changing the ocean. Michael Jamros works with tribes to monitor areas in Southeast Alaska for toxic shellfish. He says some years are just volatile.
Yeah, that's what we've seen so far.
This summer, his lab has documented high levels of paralytic shellfish poisoning, especially around Ketchikan and Prince of Wales Island. But it's unclear what that means. He says Alaska's record of tracking this is still relatively young.
It's only been in the past decade or two where we've really been looking at it closely enough to start even being able to model this.
And that's compared to nearly 80 years of testing in places like Washington State. But there are more coordinated efforts happening in Alaska. A new map will show where the toxin is cropping up all around the state. Jamros thinks that's the future when it comes to tracking paralytic shellfish poisoning.
While we can't predict it here, we've noticed certain beaches and certain areas seem to be very low in toxicity compared to other ones. So there are spots that are less prone to these toxic blooms.
And by identifying those spots over time, oyster farmers might have a better chance of routinely bringing their product to market. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, with help from Henry Leisha in Anchorage.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Barrett Wilbur, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.